Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I'm very honored to have in the studio tonight Michael Lennon, and he's the leader and of the band Venice. And is it Venice or Venice the band? Because I know the website's Venice.
Yeah. I'm the member of the Band of Venice.
The Band of Venice. Anyway, the band consists of Michael and his brother Mark and his cousins Kip and Pat. So it's a family affair. Nice. And I was just blown away going through all these different clips. He sent me a bunch of stuff to go through to take a listen to. And besides being a great guitar player, he downplays his lead playing, but he is a great lead player. He's very tasty. But the thing is that really impressed me the most is the way he layers guitars and sets them up in the songs, because the group's a very strong vocal group and there's four-part harmony, so it's a very full sound. But the way he interweaves the different guitars, and we're going to talk about that because I think that's important, that type of arranging and layering the different guitars. So I just wanted to welcome you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I'm really honored to be here.
So let me start out, because we we're going to quiz him about all the different equipment, because the tone he gets is just unbelievable. So anyway, we're going to open up with a clip. This is from Pacific Standard Time, I think is the name of the album. And the clip is called Alive Again. And what I want everybody to listen to is how he builds up the guitar parts. So I'm going to play it from it's a good size clip. But it'll show you, starting out, it's very simple, and then he adds different guitars. So listen to what's going on, because that's really, I think, the genius behind it, is how he's juxtaposing the different guitars. So this is Alive Again, and take a listen.
Second wind, whoa, alive again. odds were against you. You turned it around. Somehow you landed on solid ground. Yeah, you fixed what was broken. You smiled in your pride. You got so much to offer. Nothing to hide.
I was explaining to Michael at the beginning, when I was going through these clips and trying to edit, it's just like there's so many cool little things. I couldn't keep them short. That's a lengthy clip. But you can see how it's building up. You start out with the banjo.
Yeah.
And then the acoustic guitar. What do you remember?
No, it's the banjo, the tinkly little, you know, ding, 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 is the banjo. And then I have it's actually this guitar that I brought, the Dan Electro with the lipstick pickups,
mm-hmm.
through a Vox pacemaker. Remember the little solid state old Vox amp?
Oh, wow.
I think it's called a pacemaker. I had two of them because someone gave me one because mine got stolen. I got it back, so now I have two of them. And it's that Vox pacemaker, a little bit overdriven, without any effects, just plugged right into it. And that guitar's doubled, the little drone.
Oh, that's doing that. Dun, 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 dun. So that's the Dan Electro. I thought that was an acoustic.
No, that's a Dan Electro through a Vox pacemaker.
Now, one of the things, and that's one of the reasons I waited through that whole thing to the very, very end, he puts in the electric guitars come in. What were you using? Because that tone is to die for.
Yeah, there's the Dan Electro doing it's like a drop D tuning.
Right.
Just doing like a two A string, E string, mm-hmm. kind of riff.
Uh-huh.
Then the banjo thing. And then I bring in acoustic, just like a very, just strumming, just straight ahead acoustic chords. You know,
which was that, a Martin or something?
That's a 1962 E160, I think it is. Is that the John Lennon acoustic?
Oh, very
cool. With the
volume
knob on it.
Very cool.
My brother had one and he loaned it to me. And it's got the tightest Gibson focus sound.
Yeah.
And that's what I really dug, that it wasn't like this big sounding acoustic. It's got this nice cut, mid-range cut.
Yeah.
And my brother loaned me the guitar because I go, I got to use it for this. I just hear it. And it really sits in its own place, like we were talking, you know, that the
it's right in the pocket. And how, because you're obviously in this song, that rhythm thing with the Dan Electro is the foundation of the song. It drives it.
Eighth note drive.
And then you have all these vocals come in. But if you listen to where you're doing with the acoustic, you have that one kind of finger picking type of thing that's going on one guitar, but when that other one comes in with those chords, it's in and out of the voice. It's the little niche.
Yeah, I had to find that spot where, you know, and that's why I knew that guitar wasn't going to be too big for the track.
Right.
I wanted it to enter like another, almost like a shaker going chick, chick, chick. That's what it kind of is to me. It's just a nice little filler in there that isn't taking up the whole track.
And the thing is cool is you're using the guitars as it's almost like it's rhythm guitar, yes, but I mean it's percussive. It's almost
And I started as a drummer when I was 5-6 years old. My brother had a band that opened for the Doors and stuff in the 60s, and I would go out there and play all their instruments when they weren't there. Sorry, Tom. But I would sneak out there and literally like sit at the drums. And so I started as a drummer, and that's why people like Danny Korchmar, who I've had the pleasure of doing an album with and got to play with, and we're good friends, and he could tell that I am a drummer, rhythm guitar player, because I drive the band with what my part is, my main part.
Right.
He goes, you're like me, like you have that part that like tells the band what they should play.
Did you do the drum part on that on this cut?
That's a drum machine on that one cut.
And then you did the bass.
I did everything on that track, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, because to me, I can hear the bass. It sounds like you were doing it in the sense because you knew what the guitars were doing.
Yeah.
Because the bass works in and out of it, too.
No, I love orchestrating guitars, and that includes bass, and sometimes it could even be a keyboard doing like a guitar part,
mm-hmm.
which I like to do like a clavinet thing once in a while. Lindsey Buckingham would use that trick, and I just love that sound. It's like a down-tuned guitar or something. But the 12-string is what came in, the nice chimey, birdsy. That's a Dan Electro 12-string.
Oh, okay.
And that's through a little Princeton reverb, like a 74, I think it is, Silverface.
Okay, because yeah, that's the
chimey. And that, again, like you were saying, like if they all have their own space in the audio field or whatever you call that, they work and they don't get in each other's way. And that's what I was going for, to like try to find these sounds that were all unique, but they gelled together to make one kind of backdrop for the song.
Well, I'm going to play another clip. This one's from Welcome to the Rest of Your Life. This is called One Word, and I edited different places. So, I mean, the songs, there's a lot of vocals. These albums, the group is the four vocals and the songwriting. But there's some interesting stuff that he's doing on this. There's some finger picking, and I want to talk about how he built the rhythm. It sounded to me like guitar, but I'll let him tell the story of what happened on there. And then there's some great slide guitar on it. It's really a beautiful song, and the way that it's just 100% taste. That's when people ask me, it's like, how would you describe this? It's just taste.
Thank you very much.
Anyway, so this is called One Word. Let's take a listen to this, and then we'll take a look at what he did on it. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on, and the song is pretty well developed, but you can hear I cut in the middle section, and one thing that's just really cool, I like subtle little things like that, and the slide guitar, you start doing the slide lead, and then they have the organ like trail,
yeah.
You just have it mixed right under it.
Yeah.
That's a very cool thing. I thought that was really nice, and then I want you to talk a little bit, there's several different acoustic guitar parts that you're doing in there. And then a little bit about that rhythm.
Yeah, so the original, that rhythm at the beginning, like the... we were programming the beat like with a hi-hat and a conga part on a drum machine. And then we have, there's real drums that come in a little bit later on that. So it's a hi-hat and a conga part. Well, I was recording the conga part and I didn't know that I had the sequencer on loop. And so I recorded the conga part over the conga part. And so it hit just a different beat a little bit because I didn't have the quantization on, quantization on. And so it flanged the conga and made it that weird, almost like I'm playing the... almost that sound.
I thought you were doing it on guitar. It sounded to me like you're tapping the guitar.
Exactly. No, it's not that, but it would be cooler if that was what it was.
Yeah, but no, it's just...
So the drum machine weirded out, and we were like, wow, that's really cool. And then that was kind of how the song started, was just that groove. And then I did the...
And he's doing that with pick. He's using a pick, and
yeah,
then he mutes,
a pick.
And he's
and a
muting.
lot of muting here to get the like a real, almost like the same sound that you hear on the. So together they kind of sound like one.
Well, it sounds like a finger picking type of thing, but it's working.
Driving. So that's what started it. And then I did the... I do like a root five finger picking thing, but I turn it around halfway through the bar. So I go... Wait, how do I do it? Three, four. One, two, three, four. So I keep turning the beat around where the one is.
Yeah, it has like a sync. It kind of syncopates.
It's in, and then it's in the pocket. Then it syncopates.
Yeah,
it, like,
yeah, yeah.
It goes
it's
on
like
the up
counter.
Yeah,
counter.
But when it's mixed in the back, it's got this kind of eerie little. I don't know, just like it. Like
it's
you
a
said,
very no. It's a very
it
cool
gives
thing.
Another code.
But I liked. I was like, how did he get that to hit against the beat and keep it tight? I mean, that's it's it sounds really tight, but it's you're playing. It's almost like it's counterpunnel. So. It works. It just adds that little ear candy.
There. Yeah, and exactly. It comes in, and then the straight ahead, just the nice rakes and stuff are my 52 Tele reissue. That's through the little Princeton again, and then all that tasty little all that little bluesy kind of country bluesy. Tasty little things on the outro. That's like I think it's a Guild Starfire 3 or something, like an old 60s Guild hollow body, almost like a 335.
That's the one I saw in some of the pictures on your website,
yeah.
Which is www.venicethebandcom.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a very
so
cool
guitar.
So I
have a reissue of that guitar, but when I made that record, the Compass Point Studios in the Bahamas, where we recorded it, the guy had an original one, and he let me play it through a Vox AC-30. So that all that tasty stuff is a Vox AC-30 with the Guild Starfire 3, I think. Well, maybe the new one's called the 3, but anyway. So that, and it was just, we didn't even use any effects. I just plugged into that amp, and it was like,
that's all
it.
You
just,
need.
Yeah,
but how's the new one? Does it sound pretty close?
It sounds really close. It's
now,
really
what do you,
good.
Since you're talking about you were using the Vox on the session, what do you use live to get that sound?
My go-to amp for a long time, believe it or not, was a Fender Hot Rod Deluxe.
Okay.
The little 40-watt tube amp. And I can get almost anything I need out of that. But recently, in the last 2 years, I've been playing a new Kolk amp. It's a Dutch amp because we tour a lot in Holland, and the guy brought me this amp.
How do you spell that?
K-O-C-H.
Oh, okay.
And I'm playing, he's got an amp that's got, it's like a two-channel thing, but it's part solid state and part tube. It's kind of a hybrid, but it sounds like an all tube mic. It's,
oh, okay.
I mean, an all tube amp. Yeah, it's.
But does it get that kind of? Is that where you get that box
type of?
Yeah, it gets
a beautiful, big bottom, punchy bottom, but it gives a nice sparkly high, and it does. It's not ear fatiguing. I like a really warm, fat tone. I don't usually go for bright, harsh.
No, you and I noticed that a lot of the sounds. You do dirty it up on some of the leads
sure,
and stuff,
sure.
But for the most part, you get these really
I like a
I
nice
call it glassy, a real glassy, yeah. clean.
I love
tone.
That. Some people call, you know, like a, I don't know, it's like, it's just a warm, I like a warm kind of fat tone, mm-hmm. you know.
And then you have at the end, in the, towards the end of the clip, you're using, do you use a volume pedal or are you doing that with your hand? Like you had like a volume pedal on the, I don't know if that was the slide, where you had these like drone chords.
Yeah, I think it's a volume pedal and that's the 52 Tele, I think, with the slide stuff.
Okay.
It's kind of, I like, a lot of my slide playing is kind of inspired by George Harrison's slide playing. You know, he does these melodic, beautiful, just, these little hooks.
Yeah.
And that's what I like to think of like that, like another simple part, and not like I'm playing a solo over this verse or something. I like to just add another color, almost like a pedal steel player would do it.
Yeah, I mean, some of it sounds like, yeah, at least like a lap steel, but you're getting that tone. You're
But I'm going for that on purpose. I'm intentionally not trying to sound like, oh, a Tele slide player.
Right.
I'm trying to be like a, you know,
it has more
I can't
of
afford
that,
to fly in a Nashville pedal steel guy, so I'm going to fake my way and get that beautiful.
Well, those Teles, actually, that pickup was similar to the lap steels that they made.
Yeah.
So that sound, if you set it up right, the Tele can get you that type of pedal
sound. And I use the bass pickup on the Tele almost all the time. I rarely will play the treble pickup on my Tele.
I just
love that sound.
Well, was it Clarence White of the Byrds? He used to, with the B bender, they use those on those to get that tone.
Yeah.
I mean, it
they use the bass pickup?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to get that rich overtone.
Yeah,
to
just nice, a it's nice, really fat, full. Warm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still got the sparkle of that Tele on top, you know, so you don't. You know.
And then what, do you remember what acoustic guitar you were using for that?
That's a Guild, I think it's called an F-150. I think it's a jumbo body Guild.
Oh, okay. The big, like the John Denver one?
That's, yeah.
The big
one? It's like that one, yeah. It's like a 1980. I think I bought it used at a music store in Santa Monica, and I still have it to this day. Action is like electric guitar. It's crazy how nice and low the action is, but it plays freaking great.
Those are great guitars.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Everyone that sees it is like, wow, that thing's... Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's from Welcome to the Rest of Your Life, that great album.
Thank you.
And, well, let's... Okay, I want to talk a little bit about... I'm going to go to the next clip. This one, well, it's from the same album, so... But what's really cool about this, and it's rare that I haven't heard it a lot, and it's like one of the coolest things ever, is slide 12-string guitar. And you do that on here, and there's a lot of layers. So let's take a listen. This is called Unbreakable Heart, and I cut together different parts of it so that we can, you know, to show some of the different things you're doing. But the 12-string on this is to die for. And we'll get into what you were using and how you approached that. Here's Unbreakable Heart. That's a great track, and it's the whole rhythm section of that is just really it's great. Well, let's take a look at the 12 string. What were you using?
Another surprise for you.
Okay,
it's not a 12 string.
It's not.
No, it's a Tacoma acoustic guitar, doubled with a Tele.
A Tacoma acoustic.
I think it's called which model is it? It's a little parlor guitar.
Okay. Parlor. Okay.
So it's with this you know, regular, just a glass slide, but then I doubled it with the Tele. So it almost sounds like, that's why I think you're hearing the 12 string, you're hearing that chimey thing.
But it's, you're not playing octaves?
I don't think so.
You're playing that straight.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
There's such different timbres that they work.
I'll tell you, I've heard Harrison get that type of tone.
And that's George Harrison right there. That riff that I came up with is just, for me, it's like George Harrison coming through me. The melodicness of it and the bee-a-dee-da-bow, you know, it's kind of swinging.
Yeah.
But that's totally George Harrison. Traveling Wilburys, you know, I'm a big fan of Jeff Lynne, his stuff, the way he, you know.
The way he puts it.
He puts tracks together.
And you're doing, and you get this great riff, and then everything else kind of fits around. And again, the riff works around the vocal. It's kind of like, you know, you said it's based on the riff, but what did you do? Was the vocal first or the riff? It sounds like the riff was after the vocal.
Well, the riff, the actual that slide riff is not playing when the vocal's singing. So that's like to me, that's the hook of the song. That's like the guitar riff.
Right.
And then he starts singing, and then I lay off that riff.
But so you're doing stuff around the vocal, though, too. That's kind of based on
it. Again, like a pedal stuff.
Right.
But because it's, like I said, doubled with acoustic and electric, it's got this kind of chimey, which is really cool that you thought it was a 12 string. Because when you were telling me, I was going, did I play 12 string slide? And then when I heard it, I was like, I literally flashed back to doing it.
Oh,
I was
very
like,
cool.
Oh, and I think the acoustic is doubled, like left, right, and then the electric was just added just to give it some meat. So it might even be left, right, acoustic, same part, and then a third track of the electric, the Tele.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that might be another reason why it sounds so big and wide, because I kind of...
Well, no, it's a distinctive sound, but I mean, I don't... It's interesting to me because I could hear the two... There's two distinct tones in it, and... The closest I could think of is a 12 string rather than two different guitars.
I really think it's their harmonic overtones of the two instruments that are making you hear an octave. I mean, happens to me all the time. We do harmony vocals on our songs, and we're like, who's singing the really high part? We're like, it's not. We solo it, and it's me doing an octave lower, but with all of our vocals together, we're all family, and there's this weird overtone that happens. It sounds literally like someone's screaming way up there. It's really... It happens a lot. I think it can happen with guitars as well.
Well, no, it
definitely would happen.
I think it was Penderecki, if I can go back to my classical roots, where he would have two flutes blow certain notes and it would generate a harmonic, which would sound like a chord.
Yeah.
I've heard that about vocals, too, that there's a trick to it.
Totally can. I mean, we didn't do it on purpose. It was just by accident. We listened back to a track, we're like, when do we put the high part on there?
Yeah.
It's not. It's just the overtones of our voice together and my low part, you know.
But your vocals, you're not are you guys doubling your parts too? Or are you just doing the four part?
It depends. It depends on the song.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll go around one mic like a Beach Boys thing, you know, and blend. Other times we'll each do our part separately and then I'll blend it after the fact. So it kind of it's always whatever the song calls for. Yeah, just like...
Now, in this song, too, it sounded like there was electric guitar muted type of a thing going on. And what was that? Was that the Tele?
That's my... I think that's the Dan Electro again.
The Dan Electro.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then what else was... There was something else in there down there.
Yeah, there's an acoustic strumming. That same 62 J160E. Is that what it was called?
Mm-hmm.
J160. And then that's the line. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember because I think that's capoed, so I can't play it right now. But that the arpeggio thing is acoustic and electric doubled again.
Oh, okay.
So on that, so that's kind of got this, almost sounds like a 12 string as well. Now that when I listened to it, I was like, no, is that a 12 string? But remember that's just doubled. The main riff of the song, that's acoustic and electric playing that riff.
Oh, I
really love that. I'm a big fan of Mike Campbell, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and when he just does those simple, and Jeff Lynne does it, George Harrison does it, Tom Petty does it, you know, you just get that driving eighth note that's not dirty necessarily, but it's just got a nice meat to it, and it just helps drive with that hi-hat, you know. I love that backdrop to be able to do.
Yeah.
You know, syncopate over that, but just let that.
Well,
you,
again, like it's your drumming roots because
it's
very percussive and it functions more percussive than just it.
Exactly. And you, a lot of my stuff, if you mute the drums and you just listen to the guitar orchestration, you pretty much hear the song groove because I'm covering one guitar's the hi hat, the other guitar's the bass drum, the other guitar's playing the snare thing. You know, and maybe one just doing that part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that, to me, that's my old Motown roots and influence, where they would just have these amazing musicians, and one guy would just be doing, you know, the funkiest track in the world, and that is like as funky as anything on there.
Yeah,
for me.
And it just gives you that little...
And maybe the other guy's just doing the...
That's what Pete was talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, that's like as thrilling as someone going, you know. It's just amazing, the simplicity, but it's like it's so funky that, like, where he chose to put that backbeat, you know?
Yeah, so, well, that old saying, less is more.
Less is more, man. Those old arrangements.
A lot of those R&B sessions, that's all you needed to do is just a little backbeat, a little bit behind the beat.
Exactly right.
And it would just drive it.
Two guys, and one guy would go, I'll do the chick, chick, and you do the other, you know, or they double the bass. It's like double in the bass, just really simple, but man, it just it's a foundation you can build you know, a castle on.
Well, and I think that's true in listening to your music. Your guitar parts, like you said, if you muted the drums, it's pretty much there already.
Yeah, you hear the groove.
The drums, especially the kick drum, you get that low push that hits you in the chest.
Yeah.
And then you usually, from what I'm seeing, you usually do like a melodic hook for the bass. So it's melodic as opposed to dum 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 dum,
exactly.
Or something like, or root and fifth. You're basically it's
another part
orchestration. It's another it's another line.
Yeah.
It's melodic,
exactly.
And I think that's cool. And it makes to the whole arrangement. Again, this one, that was a pretty straightforward kind of a rocker type of thing,
exactly.
With that rhythm, but it got interesting where when you put things in. And then when the voices came in, how the other guitars, those extra guitars, the rhythm guitars, the strumming, or the I think the Gibson, it added to that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to play another clip. This one's from Lucky 7. It's called Hibernate. And again, another one that shows some really cool. There's a guitar. Again, he has that hook riff guitar thing. And then there's a bunch of guitars in here. And then listen at the very end of what I cut out. At the, when I'm going in the fade out, he does this really cool acoustic lick that's in there. That's really good. And again, it's just taste, and it's like all this ear candy that you know that you hear on this thing and on all these songs. And it's a treat. It's a real good treat to just hear all this. This is called Hibernate. It's a great clip. I thought that was an acoustic lick at the end, but it's electric. But there is something interesting that A, this one has a dominant piano part. That's and it's interesting how you're working that against the guitars. But you have an electric, and that's, I presume, is that the Tele or is that the Starfire? No, that's the Dan Electro.
Guess who wins again? Dan, what is this, a $300-something guitar that just sounds good?
It just, and then you're the,
now that riff is actually my cousin Pat. That's his riff he came up with.
On the electric?
Yeah. That main ding, ding, ding. And then I said, well, how am I going to go with that? Because that's such a, I mean, he's filling, he plays through the whole song is the same riff over and over again. So then I picked up my acoustic, and I happened to have it in Dadgad.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
So I was like, oh, well, shoot, I'm not on the right. So I was going to go tune it. I just started screwing around. Of Loggins and Messina, you know, the old Loggins and Messina albums,
like,
Angry Eyes,
Jimmy Messina.
Angry Eyes, right? That's
but
like,
the whole vibe, I thought the things had a real Steely Dan type of feel.
Yeah, that was too. Really, I mean, I'm a huge fan of that too, but I just like that the fact that those kind of, I mean, those are like weird, reminds me of Joni Mitchell when I hear like dissonant but beautiful. And against that bluesy, simple thing he's playing, I think it really has a nice. And then the vocal harmonies, of course, you know. But I really, we play that song almost every show now because it just feels so good.
It's a great groove.
Oh, it's just
and doing those vocals live, it just kicks.
Oh yeah, blows, it hits right away with four parts.
Now, did you do the piano part?
No, that's Monroe Jones. He lives in Nashville. He's a Grammy-winning producer. He was in the original Venice lineup, and that whole Lucky Seven album is our 1990 lineup reunited to write and record a record. And we're supposed to do part two, and we haven't scheduled it yet, but we're going to.
Well, you definitely.
So that was all of us literally playing in a room. I had to overdub my acoustic afterwards because we were in a good room, and like you were saying, needing that distance sometimes to really get the sound. And so I just recorded direct when we cut the track, but then I went back and...
So you were using the Gibson?
No, the guitar on that one is this Frida.
Frida.
The small-bodied Frida.
It has a pickup in it?
It has a pickup in it. Old Fishman Natural One or whatever they stopped making now. I love it. Billy Asher does all my guitar work, and he had... one that he pulled out of Jackson Brown's guitar, and Jackson said I could have it, so he put it in.
Very
this.
Cool.
And it sounds amazing.
I was wondering, I said, like, God, that guitar sounds just like the record. I was dang, it was really like the record. No, this tell us a little bit about this guitar, because it's not an expensive one, but God, it sounds great.
So I'm in Amsterdam. We're on tour in Holland. I'm in Amsterdam walking the... just walking around on a day off, I see a little guitar shop on the side of the Kolverstraat, which is like the shopping alley street with all the shops, and this little guitar shop. I go upstairs, all these guitars on the wall, and I see this little one tucked in there. I'm like, oh, I'm picking up, you know, $2,000, $2,500. Mm-hmm. And I go and I pick up this guitar, and this one that I have in my hand now, and I start playing. I'm like, God, this thing sounds really good. And I'm thinking, oh, I see the tag, and I thought it said 4,000. I was like, well, it's a little over me, but I can see why. You know, it just sounds amazing. Well, ended up it was 420-something euros, which is, you know, maybe 470 U.S., at least at the time. I was like, this has got to be a mistake. And it's got ebony tuning pegs. It's made in China, which I was really shocked about. But it's a company called Frida that's out of the U.K. I could not find one. Before I bought it, I went back to my hotel and I looked it up to see, like, could I get it for even cheaper in the States? And then when I looked it up, they don't even distribute it in the States. So I went back and I bought it immediately with my per diem, so I didn't eat that day. But spent all my cash getting it.
But that's a spruce top, and what kind of wood
is
it?
Look at the rosewood.
Oh!
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Look at this, bulletproof. That was me ramming the head of it headstock into the wall.
All right, let me take a
look at that. That's a beautiful matched rosewood back and sides.
That's real rosewood, too. Let me get the side of it.
I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous.
And then
My text did a little bang-bang job, which you have to get fixed, but it's a very clean, simple guitar.
That's a spruce, but I love that finish. It's like a dark sunburst.
Yeah, but isn't that just, that back is just crazy.
It's beautiful.
So it's a great guitar.
And it's got like an old Martin headstock, right? It's got like a classical, it's a pain in the ass.
It's a slotted headstock with the classical, where the tuning keys are like sideways.
And they're a pain in the butt to put strings on.
Yeah.
Really a pain in the butt. But the thing sounds amazing. I play it every live show. It's my go-to acoustic.
You gotcha.
It sounds great. Doesn't feedback. So.
I'm surprised you didn't get a J160E just to get that sound.
That was.
Because, you know, they do make them still. But
the remake, it's nowhere. I compared it to my brother's original. It's nowhere close.
Really?
I mean, it's nice, but. You know, you can't make the wood old.
That's true.
You can't make the lacquer old. You can't make it age. You can come close. I mean, maybe if you didn't have them side by side, but I did it side by side just because I thought, well, maybe I'll buy, since my brother lives in Ojai, I can't have his guitar all the time. I thought maybe I'll buy a reissue and it'll...
Right.
But it just wasn't... It sounded good.
Now, in
just,
recording, do you use any other guitars besides acoustically? Oh. Do you use Martins or any other Gibsons?
I have a Martin D28, you know. Mm-hmm. I have a Jackson Browne model Gibson, his signature model that he gave to me that has his name spelt wrong in the middle. And he hates it and I love it for that reason. And I have a beautiful David Crosby signature Martin with the sailboat on the headstock that he gave me number 4 of 250. Personally gave it to me. I got to sit with him on his bed, overlooking out his window of his bedroom, and play the thing. He gave my cousin Pat one, and then when he saw my face, when I saw him open, I was at the in Santa Barbara at Soho, and Pat had a Martin, an old Martin that David Crosby gave him. A tech in Europe dropped it by accident, and it broke into a million pieces. Billy Asher was able to fix it, but before he was able to fix it, David felt so bad for him that he gave him a brand new signature model of his Martin guitar. And then at the gig, he gave it to him. I'm just standing there like, what about me? And then David calls me up, and he goes, hey, I got a guitar for you as well. I want you to come up and give it to you. So he literally, Graham Nash got number one. His son...
James
Raymond got number 2, Pat got number 3, and he gave me number 4 of 250.
That's very cool. So that, I'm jealous.
Is that amazing? That's a great story, and he's the kindest man in the world. He's given Pat 2 guitars now, and he's giving me that one, and he's just could not be nicer. We've had the pleasure to play with him and sing with him, and what a generous guy. Yeah. Jackson Browne is extremely generous too. He's given me 3 guitars. Given me. I want you to have this. I heard what you were playing the other day. I think you could play it.
That's very cool. Well,
these people are generous, very nice people. I'm not like trying to say that I know them. I'm just telling you that a lot of people like that can be jaded and jerks. I've met a lot of them that, you know, ruin my what I thought they were going to be. You know, my fantasy.
And
these two guys are as generous and as giving as you could be.
Well, when they hear somebody play and gets great tone, I think they're like, yeah.
This, you should. I want you to have this.
I think it really is.
So anyway, those are other guitars that are in my arsenal at home. My go-to guitar is a electric-wise, at least live, is a gold top Les Paul. Mm-hmm. It's a 59 reissue that I got in 1990 that they sent me the wrong pickups. I wanted the 59 humbuckers, and they sent me what I thought were P90s. And it was a mistake, but they are actually P100s. And when I played it in the neck and everything, it just sounded amazing. It felt amazing. And I called them back up and I said, never mind, I'm not sending it back. I'm keeping what it is. I just, you know.
Yeah, the promo that I posted, that's that guitar, if I'm correct. It's that hilltop.
And I took the pickguard off because I love the look of that. I think Joe Perry from Aerosmith had that.
Well, those, you know, the single coil ones, you're in good, you know, Martin Barr from Jethro Tull used to use those a lot. They have a great sound.
It sounds amazing. And the action on it and the play, I mean, it's just, It's my go-to guitar. It's what I use. And I can get all these different sounds pretty damn close with that one guitar.
Really? You can get all those Tele sounds off of it?
Honest. Really close.
No, no, that's good. Because you get some great tones out of that Tele, those chimey type of things.
And I love that Tele. And if I could switch guitar in every song, the band wouldn't let me do that because I already almost do that. Because I'm so in it. And they're like, oh, they all sound the same. I'm like, right? You got to come over and strangle them for me.
No, I know that. Each guitar is a personality. It's its own thing.
And, you know, maybe if they heard the records and I played it all on the same guitar, they'd see what I mean. I'm always getting teased about that, so. I'm glad to talk to someone that actually cares.
No. It's a key part. Now, let me ask you real quick, too. Also, when you do the acoustic guitars in the studio, do you use one mic or two? Do you do them in stereo?
Okay, so normally I do a direct out through Universal Audio. It's an old 610 mic pre and do an 1176 compressor, but it's a unit they sell now called the 7116 or something like that.
Yeah,
and
I know
it's where they combine the two together. So I do the direct through that, pull out some of the 200 and add a little like 7K. I think you have a switch on there, and then I'll do like a 414. I have an old 414 AKG 414, or my choice is a 451, an old vintage 451 shotgun mic. I'll put that like at the 12th fret, facing at a 45 towards the sound hole, sort of, but at the 12th fret. And that's where I get a lot of my finger picking, you know. Well, this mic sounds great. Because that 451 picks up that.
Yeah.
My finger skin, everything. I don't really play with fingernails. James Taylor gets an amazing fingernail sound with his picking, but I can't always get it, so I just found like I could lay into it more if I use the skin of my fingers.
You kind of plucked it a little bit too to get so that kind of funky thing.
It does add a little high end. That's just all fingertips, and I have to keep my nails cut because they will grab once in a while. That is an ugly sound.
Yeah, and just so you know, these are 4035.
These are beautiful.
Audio Technicas, and they're like $100. But they sound good, and they really work well with electric guitars.
I use their 4050 on all of our vocals.
Those are great. Those are great.
And I use them for we'll get to the room sound of the electrics, but that's what I use for the room sound.
Well, let's go to the room sound of the electrics. We're almost out of time.
I know.
And I got a big clip to play.
Darn.
But anyway, room
sound, good old-fashioned 57 up close on either the Princeton or an old Deluxe. Or the new 40-watt Deluxe, the reissue that they make.
How far away?
The 57, right on it. Yeah, I'll go right on it. A little bit off, you know, not on the off cone, but off access a little bit. And then in the back of the room, because I'm, at least for the garage recordings I do, on the opposite end of the room, I'll put the 4050 up a little more in the air, kind of like as if, like where it sounds good to me when I'm standing in the room. Mm-hmm. So I just copy that. And I put it back, and again, facing the amp. And then I pan it, because I read this thing that Jimmy Page did.
That was the sound.
That he would do a close mic on a little amp, and then he'd put a room mic back in the room. He probably had multiple to choose from. And then he'd just pan them off a little bit, so you get, you literally get the close sound here. But then the sound over there, even if it's not very loud, just gives that close mic sound just size and space. It puts it in a room instead of... You know, that.
Well, wait. Try this. If you have the room to do it in your studio, put the 57 when you're using your amp, like you have it off access, about instead of a foot, maybe 2 feet or 3 feet away from it, 6 to 7 feet away. Put your AKG 414.
Okay.
And then way as far back as you can go, if you have a Neumann, that's what we used to use. But try your 40, was it 4050?
Yeah.
Try the 4050 or something that's good for real wide range that can get the room.
Yeah.
Try that and then sit you don't need to pan it, just mix it together.
Wow.
And
you don't get a phase thing because they're all different distances going through the same speaker?
No, and it's almost like there is a delay that far away, especially when I did a session, they did that. And I was using a Fender Vibrosonic, which was like a twin with a 15 JBL. And that one in the back was getting about at least a millisecond to 2 milliseconds. So it was enough of a delay where there wasn't flanging. It just, but it got the room. But you need a really good mic for the room. And the 414 was the driver of the whole thing. We didn't use as much of the 57. But the guy spent about, the engineer that was doing the session, he spent about 20 minutes and mixed it, and it sounded huge.
You can't always have a huge guitar if there's something else that needs to go in there too, but man, I think I record it that way on every track, and then I don't always use a lot of the room one, but I very seldom will just do a 57 on an amp. I always have some.
Well, the 57 is a killer. The other thing is, because you're using open back amps, depending on the room, like in this room here, we have it's just a wall.
Yeah.
So it's reflective. And mic your 57 and then pull the amp about 3 feet from the wall and then put a mic or one mic or two mics if you want to and point them towards the wall and pull the reflection.
Oh.
But you got to do it in a way maybe above or set the amp so that it's you can just get the wall. So you don't want to pick up as much of the
direct
amp itself, the direct signal, so you get a little more, and it you know, because that's
wow, that sounds cool.
You know, when you play in a club, that's what the function of that open back. It does make it sound fuller because it's actually reflecting in the back. That all that energy is going back there somewhere. So if it bounces off the wall, and there's enough of a delay where it shouldn't phase, it should be. You know, there's enough there. But anyway,
yeah, probably got to play with the mic and see where it works. That's awesome. Okay,
so that's it.
I got some new toys.
You gotta let me know how you work. But you'll get a huge sound. But I mean, it'll the thing is, those things will get really huge where you might not be able to overlay as much, but it'll get you a nice
Give me a nice fat sound, so I don't have to overlay.
Anyway, we're out of time, and I want to play this clip to take us out, and I want you to set that up. But before we do that, what's happening with the group and how?
Well, we just came back from a European tour. We were in Paris, we're in Germany, we're in Denmark, and we finished in Holland, which is kind of our home away from home. We have a gold record there and all that. So we just got back from that spring. We're home. We just did a big Lennon. Our Lennon family is all musical, and so we have the whole, like a reunion on stage. We're related to the Lennon sisters from the Lawrence Welk show. Our dads sang together in the 40s and 50s. Of course, they're not alive anymore to sing, but so the whole family is musical, and so this is a show that we do like a circus almost, where there's, you know, probably 20-something different people singing throughout the night, and they're all related. And it's a fundraiser. We do two nights. We just finished that. And then we have some local shows coming up. One great venue, Bogies in Westlake Village. That's on August 6th. And then we're playing the Coach House on August 19th with the band Honk, which is a band that did a soundtrack to Five Summer Stories, a surf movie I grew up and love. So we're excited about that. And then we go back to Europe again end of November. Into December for like an acoustic Christmas show. We do old churches, like 1,000-year-old churches, with an acoustic Christmas show, and people just love it. So totally different show than we do in the spring.
So the Bogies show, the tickets just went up. They're on Eventbrite. There's a 6 p.m. and an 8 p.m. show. Because we had one show in January, and people were breaking the doors down. So we had to add a second show. And that's up in Westlake Village. So check out Eventbrite if you're in the LA area and come see Venice.
Yeah, it's great food there too, and just a great atmosphere. Really
beautiful,
intimate.
Yeah.
Now I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank
and this
you.
Is just the greatest music. And of course, Lori, for introducing me. This is a real treat.
Thank you, Lori, for introducing me.
Music is fantastic.
Yes,
his newest album is Into the Morning Blue. And go to www.venicetheband.com. If I'm correct, this is available everywhere on Amazon, all the major.
Yeah. CD
so
Baby,
it's
Amazon.
A really great album.
You heard always it. A good merch table at the shows.
Yeah. And I'm going to play the last clip. I'm going to play the whole song again. This is just the way it builds up. It's just beautiful. And it's called Right Where We Left Off on the album Pacific Standard Time. So if you could really, and there's a lot of cool little licks that he's doing in there. Can you kind of just briefly, I know you haven't heard it right now, but if you can just kind of set it up a little bit, what you did on it. Do you remember?
Yes. It started with the slide riff that you're going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Started with the slide riff idea I had for this 7/8 weird timing, 7/8 time slide riff I had. And so that, around that slide riff, I had the idea to do this, I'm in Dadgad, I'm not going to do that. But I thumb slap the harmonics, and I play the chords on my left, and I use my thumb to do the harmonics with my right hand. So that's the main riff you're hearing, the percussive riff, mm-hmm. is an acoustic doing that. And then, it's just built up, and it's got just acoustic rhythm guitar. But anyway, I'll let the song speak for itself.
Here is, everybody have a great week, and check out Venice's, their albums. All this stuff is just, if you want to hear tasteful arrangements and just the coolest guitar stuff, they're the guys to take a listen to. So thank you. You're more than welcome. But this is Right Where We Left Off. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.
The sea is on my left, the mountains on my right. The sea is on my left, the mountains on my right. See?